evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic for tonight is Star Search. Can you trust online reviews? A recent report that cross-referenced San Francisco restaurant bookings with reviews on Yelp concluded that a half-star rating increase from 3.5 to 4 stars caused an increase of 19 percentage points in the sellout rate for primetime reservations. Indeed, consumers have the power to be both brand advocates and brand assassins. Business reputations that may take decades to build could be damaged in a day. Tonight, we're talking about the impact and integrity of user-generated reviews when it comes to postings on retailer websites, social networking community rating systems, and third-party reviewing sites. How has this powerful information stream evolved? Who's gaming the system? And what is the role of the professional critic in society? Joining me to answer these questions and more are in studio Matt Stewart. Matt is co-founder and co-CEO of Main Street Hub, which helps local businesses attract more customers by protecting their reputation and spreading word of mouth online. He holds an MBA from Stanford University. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks.
We also in-house have, in studio, have Jesse Hirsch. And Jesse is a restaurant critic and food writer who writes weekly restaurant reviews for the San Francisco Examiner. And he has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the San Francisco Chronicle, Wine and Spirits, and the Village Voice. Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
And by phone, we also have Yaniv Dover. Yaniv is an assistant professor at Tuck Business School, the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. And his areas of expertise are social networks, economics of information, word of mouth, diffusion of innovations and information, and social media. Welcome, Yaniv. Thank you for being on by phone so late at night.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And we'll start taking calls in about 20 minutes. Thanks all of you for coming and joining our conversation this evening. I think I'd like to start with Yaniv. Now, you are the assistant professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, and your areas are social networks, economic information, word of mouth, and diffusion of innovations and information in social media. How has this all evolved in the last 5 years, partly due, I guess, to the internet and other, just the way things have happened?
It's a big... question, right? If you ask me, it evolved. So the internet is only a part of it, right? So there's a lot of technological evolution that occurred, and that led to, I would say, and of course this is really, really succinctly saying what happened, but in general, there's a process of decentralization. Mm-hmm. Consumers are, I would say, empowered. They have much more access to information that they've had basically for the last, half a century or so, and even going beyond that. Information is cheap. Information is accessible everywhere. And consumers can connect to each other, talk with each other about things that were not really easy to talk about in the past, and leads to a lot of maybe spam in the system. So some people complain that Twitter is all about talking about what you ate for breakfast or how you want to brush your teeth, but with that spam or with that sort of high noise or low signal to noise ratio information comes also sort of the democratizing of information. So the information is not only of companies, of, strong or resourceful entities. It's also now accessible to the public, so to speak.
So
that changes everything.
Do you think, in your opinion, do you think this democratization has been a good thing or bad thing or both?
I think it's a good thing overall. I think it's, and of course, what I'm saying right now is not supported by scientific research, because it's, these are things that are really hard to prove robustly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if it's sort of an integration that I'm doing, seeing all these isolated evidence of data, of research. And I think it's a good thing in the general direction, but it also comes with bad things. And I think we have to understand, as a society and the regulators, maybe the government or other entities, have to understand how to regulate it. But in general, it's a good thing. Now, I mean, I guess we'll get to that later during the show, but I'm optimistic, basically.
And so when the people that were the co-founders of Yelp and these other sites, I guess, the democratization was their intent. Do you feel like they've reached this goal? Do you think that it's been in a big brush standpoint?
They were probably capitalizing on democratization, which is good. It's part of the system. It's part of the incentives. It's part of the game, so to speak. But I think they're now supplying a very good resource for people, right? So if it used to be the case before the internet, say, that when you went on a hotel, for example, like you reserved a place in a hotel, your ability to really tell anything about that hotel or that restaurant or that, a salon was very limited. It was limited to your access to friends who knew that place, and that, that was very, that's a rare thing when a friend actually knows a hotel. Usually, so you would probably be limited to hotels that your friends went to, which is kind of limiting. Now you can get a lot of information. Is that information clean? Is that information exactly the information you want? That's questionable. That's a good question that I just asked myself. But it's definitely more information than we had before.
Okay. Well, let me bring in Matt Stewart, co-founder and co-CEO of Main Street Hub. So, do you feel that online reviews really affect the success of local businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you cited one study earlier, but there's another study by Harvard Business School that suggests that for a 1-star increase in a Yelp review for an independent restaurant, that translates into a 5-9% increase in revenue for that restaurant. So from that perspective, it's, phenomenally impactful to local businesses. If you take the other angle there from the consumer perspective, over 80 million people go to Yelp monthly, for example, to pick one local business compared to its competitors. And so, in that moment, they're choosing where to spend their money based on reviews of real people who've had real experiences with that restaurant. So it's absolutely impactful, and those businesses that embrace it can see great success.
Now, Yelp has a lot of sectors. Are there certain sectors that people seem to want to get quick information reviews about, whereas others they're more like word of mouth amongst friends or consumer reports?
Sure. I mean, Yelp focuses on all local businesses, more or less. And in certain cities, there are certain industries that have more reviews for certain types of businesses than others. But by and large, it's helpful for all types of local businesses, be it a restaurant, an auto repair shop, a dentist, these types of businesses.
So it's across the board. There's not like one area that seems to resonate more with user-generated reviews.
More or less, it's widespread across local business industries. That's right.
Okay. So, you work with companies protecting their reputations. So, are companies in general a little scared of all the social media, or are they excited by it and want to kind of embrace this new way of getting word out?
Sure. Some are apprehensive and some are extremely excited. And, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, frankly, what any individual business owner thinks of Yelp. He or she can't delete the reviews that are on Yelp, and Yelp and other, local business review websites like Google or TripAdvisor or these things are here to stay. So Those business owners that, like you said, embrace the conversations that are happening about them online really are the ones that see success. But sure, you know, some are skeptical at first, and some certainly are questioning sort of how the whole thing works.
Well, can you give us a little bit more of the landscape in terms of, you know, people always think of Yelp initially, but it's a lot more than that, especially when you're talking about a reputation of a company, correct?
Sure, absolutely. In terms of online review sites in general, you know, there's Yelp, there's TripAdvisor, Google has reviews, of course. You know, then there's industry-specific sites like Urban Spoon for restaurants or DealerRater for auto dealerships, for example. But an online reputation spans far beyond just online reviews. Of course, there's the business's website or its social media, for example, which is extremely important, like Facebook and Twitter.
And so when you're helping someone control the reputation, what sort of things do you look at?
Sure. So, of course, there are online reviews, and we make them look as good as possible on the websites that consumers are choosing their business in the moment they're looking to spend money compared to other competitors. We're also helping them spread word of mouth on websites like Facebook and Twitter, right? Because, as Yaniv mentioned earlier, it's a way, you know, businesses, word of mouth is so important to local businesses, right? And you know, what your friends say about a business is one way you pick that business, right? And word of mouth has gone online to websites like Facebook and Twitter. So it's a way for a business to spread its word of mouth and, you know, increase the number of people who are hearing the good word about the business and its positive online reputation.
Okay. Well, I'm going to loop back to that. But first, let me bring in Jesse. So, Jesse, you are an official critic, food critic.
Yes, I am. Yes.
And you're not just a person that writes your opinions on Yelp.
Susie Sunshine, 1968. Yes. No, great paper, yes.
So tell us a little bit about how you've seen this whole review evolve and how it's changed how you get work or how people, you know, what you had to do either to keep getting work or if you feel people still, you know, there's still need for people.
Sure.
Like yourself.
Well, I started being a restaurant critic once Yelp was already well established and all the other online review sites. So I have not seen the landscape change. It's kind of been a reality that I've had to accept. And I think that it's a great thing. It gets people, as far as just exclusively restaurants, it gets people more involved in the conversation. The democratization, as Yaniv was saying, is pretty widespread, and it gives people a voice. They feel like they can take part in things. But it also creates a lot of noise. I feel like there's a lot of voices all coming in at once. If you look at any restaurant review, there's going to be like 560 ratings up there, and you don't know most of the people on there, probably any of them. A restaurant critic, at the same time, goes on week after week. You can decide whether or not, I mean, you may not agree with anything they ever say. I read A.O. Scott's movie reviews every week, and I rarely agree with anything he says, but I still like to read him. But there's consistency, and there's a professional voice. And for a lot of restaurant critics, there's training as well. They've been doing it for such a long time that they're able to have a yardstick to measure good versus bad. Presumably, the reviews are not going to be... The ATM was broken on this particular night that I visited the restaurant, so... I had a terrible experience, and some have professional kitchen experience. They know exactly what went into preparing that braised pork shoulder. Or
what was your background?
I'm a journalist by trade, and I started editing a food magazine about 5 years ago. So it has been kind of trial by fire. I don't have a background in cooking, but as I've been doing this for a long period of time, I start to see patterns, and I see what the trends are that are emerging, and I'm able to rate restaurant A versus restaurant B.
Do you think that, I mean, do you ever have one of those days where you're like, ah, oh, like these guys, you know, there are some people on Yelp that actually are really good and like I'm not really sure what value I'm adding or
oh, absolutely,
do you pretty much-
yeah. Yelp or food blogs, all the different voices there on the internet, it absolutely feels like, where is my place in this new world with so many different people out there? But week after week, when you get the feedback, when you see that people are actually listening to what you're saying, and when they get angry about what you're saying, that's actually one of the best gauges that there actually is a purpose for you out there.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, let me loop back to Yaniv. Do you have you seen, like, I know we're talking about, you know, Jesse, who's a food critic, but in general with critics, like, you know, paid critics that have, you know, worked for a publication or whatnot, how have you seen their role be in the whole scheme of this online user-generated world?
There's no research that supports it. Research is kind of lagging behind all the important questions, as usual. But I would say it's a spectrum. So the world is complex, and consumers have complex needs. And you know, they could go to their friends to have, to filter out products or places that they feel that they can trust their friends to recommend. On the one hand, but on the other hand, sometimes they need the professional voice. Sometimes they need a person that knows the subtleties, that you know can explain things that their friends can't. So it's a spectrum. It's the nice thing about democracy, if we're going to use this analogy, is that there's anyone can basically express their opinions, and there's a voice for anyone, and people can actually have the choice and choose whether they want to use different voices and different qualities and different aspects, etc. So definitely, I think there's a spectrum and there's a place for everything. And like Jesse said, at the end of the day, the feedback and that you get and the exposure that you get happen sort of they emerge, they happen naturally, organically, and they basically determine, like in a real live, a bit scary democracy, they determine, or the feedback determines how much voice you have, or how much impact you have. So,
well, I want to talk a little bit about the whole idea of gaming and ethics. And I mean, actually, interestingly, I want to start with you, Matt, because I'm curious, as you are talking to these companies, what's the difference between managing your reputation versus manipulating it?
Sure. Great question. So, we recommend that you just respond to the reviews you're getting online, for example. So it's genuinely engaging in a conversation that's, sparked by a review that you get from a real customer. So it's not at all about manipulating. It's just engaging in the conversation, explaining your side of the story, perhaps in certain situations, but also just genuinely thanking people who are leaving positive reviews and that sort of thing. So, and these websites give businesses opportunities to show off how great they are. If it's a restaurant, how great their food is, right? Or even an opportunity to show off how much they care about their customers' experiences. So let's say they get a bad review. Let's continue with the restaurant example. And, a reviewer talks about poor service and poor food. If the restaurant owner genuinely apologizes for that bad experience and, speaks directly to the customer in that moment, it's an opportunity to show the rest of the world that they really care genuinely about the experience that that customer and other customers have with their restaurant. So we've seen many cases where a response to a negative review can be even more influential to new incremental customers than, just another incremental positive review. So, it's not at all about manipulating. It's just about engaging in a genuine way with people.
But now, in the olden days, if you will, PR played a big role, and people would spin stories and you could say that was manipulating. You could say that was good business practice.
Sure.
So for the kind of coaching you do, like, how is that similar or different?
Sure. Well, I think Yaniv hit it earlier, and in the higher quantity of information that's available now, there's more credibility in that as well. I think you really see the trust more and more every month, literally, from the consumers and customers using these reviews, picking local businesses as a result of what they say in that regard. So I think that these online reviews are much more credible, for example, than PR or an advertisement or, a local business's website, which is very much a subjective, one-sided story. But these reviews give you a spectrum of experiences, and it's from real customers who are having actual experiences with businesses. So I'd argue that it's much more credible than, other forms of advertising or PR.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. And tonight we're discussing user-generated reviews. My guests are Jesse Hirsch, restaurant critic and food writer for the San Francisco Examiner, Matt Stewart, co-founder and co-CEO of Main Street Hub, a company that helps local businesses protect their reputation, and by phone, Yaniv Dover, assistant professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth, whose research areas include social networks, social media, and the economics and diffusion of information. And we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. I want to know, how much do you trust online reviews? And have you ever written a review? If so, what inspired you to do so? The number to call in to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So going back to this idea of sort of the ethics of it, you know, clearly there are, there's a spectrum, I would guess, of what is considered, you know, real gaming, like people that are paid or, you know, companies that offer, like, we'll write a good review for you if you pay us $5, or we'll make another company look bad by writing poor reviews, to maybe having, you know, someone who owns a restaurant saying, and if you really liked my service, please, you know, write your review on Yelp, to maybe when someone comes out with a book, you know, handing the book out to all their friends and saying, you know, write a good review if you like it. So I don't know. I guess let me go back to Yaniv. What, you know, from your perspective, where on the spectrum, what is considered shaky in terms of ethics versus completely okay?
Shaky, I guess. The way to define it is transparency. So, am I writing a review because I got because I'm the friend of the author, for example? If you're reporting that, then that's okay. Anything beyond that, I think, is on the border of shaky, and then, of course, there's, like you said, a spectrum going into the black shades. there's actually PR agencies, or at least they call themselves PR agencies, that actually have hordes of people writing good reviews. But at the end of the day, exactly like Matt is describing, this is exactly, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm not familiar with the company, but this is exactly what I experience with companies. Mostly the companies that actually succeed are the companies that know or understand that on social media and in this incredibly big social network, it's just really harder to fake, it's really harder to lie. And so, you know, nurturing relationships, staying true to yourself, telling the truth basically most of the time is the policy, and at the end of the day is, you know, the best thing to do.
You did some research, right, on hotel sites?
Yeah.
And so can you tell us a little bit about that?
So in general, what we've done is basically we took an advantage out of an existing condition. So, you know, it's really hard to, you know, really understand what when you see fake reviews. I mean, I've had a few fake reviews, and I let people look at them and try to see when they recognize them, when they don't. It's really hard. I mean, if you really are motivated, if you're the owner of a restaurant, you can write a fake review that no one can identify.
Sure.
So what we've done is we did this statistical analysis, relatively advanced, but not too much, where we took reviews on TripAdvisor, where basically everyone can post a review, right? It's open. All you have to have is an email. And compared them per hotel, for specific hotels, to Expedia, where supposedly consumers are validated. So only if you've stayed at a hotel through Expedia, you can write a review. At least you can at least think of that as more costly. And so what this allowed us, this comparison between these two conditions, to see where for each hotel, basically, or statistically speaking, you can actually see some sort of bias. Positive bias or negative bias. And we actually mathematically basically have measured how much fakery you have for each hotel or per specific hotels across something around 3,000 hotels with almost 500,000 reviews. And generally speaking, what we found is that there is fakery, and that there's more fakery for hotels that are less, that are not a part of a big corporation. So, if in terms of reputational costs, if you're not a part, if you're part of a chain, there's a lot of cost or risk in faking, and so we see less of that for big chain hotels. Independent hotels tend to fake more, not every independent hotel, but on average. But I think the encouraging thing is, which is consistent with other findings in other types of the literature when it comes to social media, is that there's not so much fakery. So there's only, there is fakery, but at the end of the day, the system is still informative, and you can, on average, trust reviews. Or the average ratings of reviews.
Okay, that's interesting. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing user-generated reviews and the pros and the cons. My guests are Jesse Hirsch, a restaurant critic and food writer for the San Francisco Examiner, Matt Stewart, co-founder and co-CEO of Main Street Hub, a company that helps local businesses protect their reputation, and by phone, Yaniv Dover, assistant professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth, whose research areas include social networks, social media, and the economics and diffusion of information. And we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. I'd be curious, have any of you ever been paid to write a review? If so, and have you ever thought that when you were reading a review that it might have been there, because of someone that didn't necessarily use the company that you're looking at, but because they might have been paid or incentivized. I'd be curious to hear from you. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134, or you can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let me go to our first caller tonight. We have someone, I guess the caller who would like to be anonymous, from San Francisco. Good evening. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought she was a caller, but actually she has written in. She says she's a psychotherapist in San Francisco who received a devastating review from a former client. Not true, of course. And she says that she can defend herself because she's not even allowed, she can't defend herself because she's not even allowed to acknowledge the relationship. So she's not really sure how she can respond. So Matt, do you have any ideas of how she could respond to this?
Yeah, great question. So the angle of and the legalities of not being able to acknowledge the relationship is tough, and I'm not familiar with that topic in particular. But in general, when responding to reviews, so I think you should respond. When responding to reviews, I think you need to be mindful of not only the reviewer, but the fact, that everyone else is going to be reading that response potentially, going forward if you choose to respond publicly. So I think the point is, the key takeaway is keep that in mind. So, I don't know the facts of the review, but however you choose to respond, just be mindful of the broader audience. And I think that goes with any response to any negative review, including this one.
Okay, so, but I think she can't because she'd lose her license.
Sure. So again, on that specific topic, I'm not familiar with the legalities. If she'll lose her license in responding to the review, I would argue don't respond. Okay. But in general, that's sort of the approach to responding to reviews appropriately, and the results are great. Sometimes it doesn't sound like it'll be in this example, but sometimes reviewers even change the review from a negative review to a positive review, which is a huge win for a local business. So the takeaway is, in general, responding is a great thing. Engaging in that conversation and embracing, the feedback is a great thing, as well as being mindful of the broader audience that's reading.
Okay. What about, now, Jesse, can you tell us a little bit about Pete Wells and the New York Times?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Everybody's been talking about that quite a bit lately. Well, for the few people that maybe didn't hear about this, Pete Wells, the New York Times restaurant critic, just reviewed Guy Fieri's restaurant in Times Square, which a lot of people would assume that the New York Times would not go and review a restaurant like this because its caliber is a little bit, it's kind of donkey sauce and funny mozzarella poppers and foods that aren't typically up to the level of the nice restaurants that the Times reviews. And so he did a scathing review, as is kind of expected, and it was hilarious and it was brilliant, and people sent it around. It was in the form of a bunch of questions posed directly from the reviewer to Guy Fieri. And there's basically two camps on this. One side says, what were you doing? What did you expect when you went to this restaurant? This was going to be a terrible restaurant. It's in Times Square. It's next to Bubba Gump's and Applebee's and the like. So there was really no place. You were just kind of enjoying being smarter than the restaurant. And then the other camp says, look, this is a guy who goes around. The Guy Fieri is a guy who goes around recommending restaurants all over the country. He's on Food TV putting his stamp of approval on restaurant A, B, C, D, E, and yet the restaurant that he makes himself is not up to snuff at all. It was terrible, as, according to Pete Wells, so he was doing a public service in writing that review.
What do you think?
Personally, I feel kind of right in the middle of that. I couldn't help but think it was a phenomenal piece of writing, of criticism. It was great. It was very engaging. But at the same time, I do kind of think that it was low-hanging fruit. It was a pretty easy home run for him to make. But at the same time, everyone knows Pete Wells' name now. He's a critic that you're not going to forget. So,
do you think, from your standpoint in this whole, like, is there anything as a critic that someone could do or not do that would be considered ethical versus not ethical? I mean, do you think what Pete did was?
Oh, I would definitely not say that it was unethical. As far as the ethics of being a professional critic go, it's a little bit different. You have to be kind of careful, especially in a small city like San Francisco, not to be too friendly with the people that you're reviewing. You have to keep a little bit of distance. Those are usually the ethical considerations that I hear. Critic A reviewed a restaurant, a place that he knows the owner, the chef of. So you have to keep a certain distance. That's where the anonymity comes in as well.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the ethics of reviewing a restaurant like Guy Fieri's, that's really going to be a case-by-case decision. I don't think it really does much of a service if you are a critic and you're going out to review a small restaurant that nobody knows about anyway, and you're going to slam it. There's no point to that. Typically, really bad reviews are reserved for restaurants that are in the public eye, that are a little more expensive, a little more high-end, kind of the new hip it thing.
Okay. Well, let me go back to, like, the gaming that's happening or possible gaming that's been happening on sites like Yelp or Travelocity. There are tools out that are on these sites now that are trying to rein in this kind of usage of the site, but they're not necessarily always correct. Like when I was doing my research, I read, you know, people that were saying that they wrote a really positive review, and then suddenly the review wasn't there because maybe it was too positive. Matt, do you have any experience with this, and how to protect yourself from, or how to protect your companies?
Sure. Yeah. So the most famous example of this, I think, is Yelp's filter. So they have, they use their technology. They have an algorithm to sift through reviews to make sure that they remain credible. So the algorithm attempts to, find fake reviews and the like to make sure that ultimately the highest quality reviews, the most legitimate reviews, end up in the hands of consumers making decisions about them. And I don't pretend to know the ins and outs of Yelp's algorithm. That's something that's kept private. But I think you need to look at it from the perspective of how much trust there is from consumers on these sites, right? So again, 80 million plus people relying on Yelp month over month to make decisions. At the end of the day, that is, if you pick a restaurant, for example, because of attributes you found in its Yelp reviews, and you had a good experience or an experience that's consistent with those characteristics in the reviews, you'll continue to trust Yelp and go back again and again. So again, I can't speak to the number of fake reviews versus non-fake versus genuine reviews, or the effectiveness of the filter in general. But I think on the whole, consumers absolutely trust these customer review websites. And I think that's an important point.
Well, Yaniv, in terms of the accountability, Matt talks about, you know, trust, but do people tend to trust the company or do they tend to trust Yelp or Travelocity or, what loses credibility or do they both lose credibility in terms of trust when the when a review isn't consistent or to what someone's experience is?
That's a specific question. I don't have a specific answer, but basically what I think happens is that consumers have some sort of trust level with the company. They have some sort of trust level with friends and with strangers, so to speak, on the internet. They basically sort of look at all the information that they have. The information gives them different aspects of a decision-making process, say, and so that's how they make the decision. I don't think anyone has actually investigated exactly the psychology of that. I'm pretty sure it's something like that will happen soon. But there's, I mean, regarding, for example, the Yelp algorithm, there were a lot of attempts, or several attempts at least, to create these kinds of algorithms. I would be very skeptical if that algorithm. You can easily recognize an anonymous reviewer that writes with spelling errors and, writes two sentences mostly with exclamation marks and capital letters. That, I would say, is easy to filter. If someone really puts their heart into it and really tries to fake a review, knowing all these things, because all these, flags that these algorithms put are, sometimes public, all you have to do is go through the reviews that were rejected. I think on Yelp, they're pretty much open. They're there, I think, most of them. People are really good at gaming. That's the point. And consumers are also, good to some extent at, using those different pieces of information in order to try to extract the truth, see if people are consistent, see if they mention the negatives with the positives. Etc.
Do people? I think I read in the New York Times article that people though tend to be more positive when they're writing reviews than negative. So, do most people tend to be when they're writing reviews, give both sides, unlike you, Jesse. I think you're paid to do that, or at least give some a little bit of a balanced review. But is that kind of one of the main differences with the reviews you would get on the online? Jesse?
I think that's definitely true. I know that when I approach any review that I'm doing on any restaurant, I will always try to find whatever positive thing, even if it was one of the worst restaurants I've ever been to. I will try to extract what the good things are, even if it's just effort. But you don't have any constrictions on you if you're writing an online user-generated Yelp review. So you could just be like, it was terrible. I hated everything. Even if you're saying more than you actually felt at the time, you don't have any filter whatsoever. So I think it does seem like it's pretty one. It, typically, pretty the Yelp reviews are either very, very positive or very negative, it seems.
Is that what you've found too, Matt?
Yeah, I think the last stats I've seen is on Yelp, the average star rating is 4.3 stars, and on TripAdvisor, it's something like 3.7 stars. So it does skew towards more positive, which I think is surprising to a lot of people digging into this for the first time. I think that it gets back to, Yelp, TripAdvisor, these other customer review websites giving an outlet to just share experiences about businesses, be it positive or negative. And people aren't just going on there to say bad things. That's for sure.
Okay. If you're joining us, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight we're discussing user-generated reviews. My guests are Jesse Hirsch, restaurant critic and food writer for the San Francisco Examiner, Matt Stewart, co-founder and co-CEO of Main Street Hub, a company that helps local businesses protect their reputation, and by phone, Yaniv Dover, assistant professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth, whose research areas include social networks, social media, and the economics and diffusion of information. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. We'd like to know from you, how much do you use these review sites, and how much do you take them for granted versus kind of look at them kind of critically? The number to call or join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I want to take another emailer. We have Jerry from Palo Alto, who his question is, he says, so are big corporations scared of the consumer? And what kind of power do we have? What are the businesses doing now or soon to keep making money? It's a really good question. Yaniv, can you take this question?
Yeah. Actually, I've being a tech, we do see sometimes what you might call senior people in big companies, very big companies sometimes. And for example, I just had a chat with one of the vice presidents of one of the big computer manufacturers, and they are scared. They are very scared. I mean, and this is not only him in general. They totally understand that information can leak freely. You think about the what you might call the Walmart mishap, and that's of course not the first mishap. In terms of there was a YouTube video of employees of Walmart throwing around iPads, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Information really easily can get out there. And think of WikiLeaks as an extreme example. These CEOs and CMOs that I'm talking with are scared. They don't show it directly, but they, basically don't leave a lot of doubt. They're scared that because it's a big organization, you cannot control everything that happens. Sometimes it's really hard to maintain consistency with employees. So consumers really have power.
And what's the most effective way for a consumer? Is it a blog? Is it Facebook? Is it a review? If a consumer wanted to really make an impact, what would be the best way?
I guess... I don't have a specific answer, but anything that would impact people, anything that will drag or be shared,
it's viral. Then,
yeah, I mean, the YouTube videos, for example, are really easy to see and pass around. And if they're controversial, and if people hate Walmart, some people, I'm not saying it's more than some, then that will also help the virality of the video. but anything that is related to, I mean, in my Facebook feed, for example, I see a lot of complaints about companies. Sometimes it's just wiped out and people forget about it. Sometimes it's forwarded and people know about it. And sometimes the company even responds.
Okay. Well, let me go to our caller. We have Jay from Oakland. Good evening, Jay. Thank you for calling.
Good evening. I have a question about how effective the filter is. The particular situation that I'm referring to is... there was a pediatrician who treated my daughter and really screwed up, basically. And I gave him 1 star, and I noticed that all of the other reviews were 5 stars of this particular physician. And shortly after giving my review, I hadn't seen him reviewed in a while, there was another reviewer that came up and gave him 5 stars. And then for his individual practice, that was a review for the group practice. There weren't many reviews. They were still 5 stars, the ones that were there. I gave a 1 star, and then shortly thereafter, there was a person who reviewed him who gave him a glowing review. I mean, one of the best I've seen, and yet she gave him only 4 stars. But what that did is it increased his average from 3.5 stars to 4 stars. And to me, a review such as that does not seem genuine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's right. So did you feel like you needed to get one of your friends to go and then write another 1 star? Or are you just kind of ready to be skeptical of the whole system?
Well, I'm skeptical of it. I'm very skeptical of it. Although I found it interesting that they kept my 1 star rating.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because all the other ones were so glowing. And yet they could have looked at me as someone who was disgruntled.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I just did a really good job of explaining what happened. But... regardless of that, I have serious doubts that filter is always effective.
Did you feel, though, that your best bet in terms of communicating was to go on and review him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Okay. Matt, do you have any response to this? Thank you, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know, I don't want to pretend to know all the ins and outs of Yelp's filter again, but it's certainly not perfect. And you know, one thing we've seen with our clients at Main Street Hub, and you know, we've responded to tens of thousands of reviews on behalf of our clients and working closely with them, and you know, we've seen that often reviews get filtered either positive or negative from reviewers who don't have a lot of history of reviewing on Yelp, for example. So I think that's one of the pieces of the filter. Again, not pretending to know all the answers of how that algorithm works, but I think that's it's one thing to look at. If you're looking at filtered reviews, you'll often find that those reviews are written by people who it might be their first review. Now, what I think Yelp is trying to do in that moment is protect against the business owner who wants to go write a negative review about his or her competitor, which we strongly recommend against for several reasons, primarily because, you know, as with any reputation, trust is everything, and you can absolutely undermine your online credibility if consumers who are reading your reviews get wind of you doing these sorts of things. Or, you know, on the flip side, a business owner writing a review about his or her own restaurant. So again, one thing to look at here is how many reviews those reviewers have written elsewhere.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, let me take another caller. We have Helene from Richmond. Good evening, Helene.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for calling in to City Visions.
No problem. I just wanted to, I hope you can still hear me. I just wanted to say that, you know, that it's beginning to take the fun and the enjoyment out of reviewing online. I really love Yelp. I thought it was kind of cool to read the reviews. And then I kind of got flagged on something, and it annoyed me so much that I have not gone back. And,
you got flagged. You know, what does that mean?
I think I got flagged. My review was flagged as fake. They never would answer me because they had posted other ones. But I did. It was a glowing review of the California Magic show thing that I went to in Concord. And it was so fun, and I kind of waxed on about it. But I've seen longer reviews and more in depth, but they flagged me, and it just sort of, and I just wanted somebody to explain, did I do something that wasn't appropriate, and I couldn't get an answer. But I still like to read the reviews, but I used to love to post to them. And Yelp kind of took that out of me. It took that because of the way they do business.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. Yaniv, do you have you heard stories like Helene's before in your research?
It's related to the fact that I think that I'm skeptical generally of algorithms. I think some of them might work. They work to some extent, but I think the foremost sort of force that can regulate, I think, reviews is people themselves. If Yelp is you know, using some sort of outside or external algorithm that they think is working, they might be hampering, you know, the review system, like we just heard with Helene. But in general, people are really good judges of their peers. So, for example, with related to the psychiatrist case, which is, you know, sort of troubling me, it's sort of a bug in the system in that sense. What she might do, for example, is, you know, talk with some other patient that she's treating, which he is sure that he or she is happy with her, and ask him, of course, not suggest or, you know, push anyone, but just ask him to go over that review and tell her, or, you know, think about the fact that is that review reflective of her talent or her abilities, and then, you know, there will be some sort of natural correction. If you're happy about the psychotherapist, you'll feel obliged to, you know, put in a good review. That's sort of the correction mechanism that I think sometimes works. With people or businesses that have not a lot of reviews, that's less efficient because, you know, there's not a lot of traffic. Maybe that, you know, pediatrician is writing for themselves. Of course, I don't know. But in this case, because there's not a lot of traffic, there's no correction or natural correction.
It sounded like she was a little bit of an outlier to your point of, like, you know, situations like this. But in Helene's case, it sounded like, you know, she had sort of a bad experience in just, you know, in the kind of day to day of writing the reviews. And I'm curious, is there a trend to, you know, are these sites continuing to grow, or is it kind of capped? And now are people not using them as much or using them differently? Matt?
Yeah, no, they're certainly growing. We've talked a lot about Yelp, and I think it's similar with the other online review websites like Google and TripAdvisor and the like. But since we keep talking about Yelp, there have been 33 million reviews written on Yelp, and now there's 80 million people using the site month over month. And that's, you know, I don't know the numbers exactly, but that's something like 10 to 15% monthly or quarterly growth, right? And I think that's in line with sort of the trend of the internet, this democratization of information, as Yaniv mentioned earlier. I think it's consumers are latching on more and more to credible information, and they view customer reviews as much more credible than other sources of information, be it advertising or PR. So yes, these sites are becoming much more popular, and I think it's because consumers, despite all the imperfections with algorithms and the like, trust these sites more and more every month.
And what are businesses doing about the new power of the consumer?
I think there's two choices, right? You can either bury your head in the sand and not engage, or you can engage if you believe that they're here to stay. And I certainly do. And so we, you know, at Main Street Hub, we advise our clients to engage, right? And so they can be responding to reviews. They can make sure they look as good as possible, like I said earlier, in the moments that consumers are deciding where to spend their money. They can proactively spread word of mouth on social media like Facebook and Twitter. So they can harness the power of the consumer and spread word of mouth with that to get them more business and keep loyal customers coming back. And they can protect their online reputation by engaging with, for example, people who are leaving reviews on their customer review websites. So it's all about engaging in the conversation.
Okay. Well, let me ask Jesse a little bit about San Francisco. You know, San Francisco has more restaurants and higher, you know, per capita income. So how does that make it different in terms of their relationship with reviews and restaurants, you know, relationship with reviews? I mean, it's probably more important for these restaurants to keep their reputation.
Oh, that's absolutely true. At the same time, because this is seen as such a restaurant city, there are so many people out there who are all having their voices heard. It just seems like there's an infinite number of food bloggers, and people from out of town come here and they like to do roundups. Travel and Leisure just did a lengthy feature piece that got a lot of press where they went to all the hottest restaurants in San Francisco. So in some sense, yes, there is a lot more engagement and a lot more scrutiny of the reviews that come out and who's talking about all these different restaurants. On the other hand, there's just so many voices out there in the wilderness to listen to. One thing I was kind of curious about as far as the online review sites is whether or not people are paying more attention to the individual things that people say or kind of the aggregate star ratings. It seems like people are more savvy and are able to kind of weed out the fakes on their own. I know that when I go on that site, which I do from time to time, I can, if it looks off, I skip right over it. But it's a little harder to argue with, you know, when you've got 900 people who've all said something and they all spoke out and they said, look, this is a great restaurant or a great dentist or it's a subpar place.
That's a great question. And what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think it's both, just in my personal opinion. So I think that you can really get a sense of trends of a restaurant by sort of glancing at how the positive and negative reviews shake out, as well as at high level what they're saying. But also, again, to talk about Yelp, you know, they try to highlight some of the specifics and try to surface some of the trends for consumers who are glancing quickly, say, on their mobile phone when they're choosing a restaurant, you know, when they're hungry. And more recently, they've started to highlight menu items. So I think you can get both a sort of top-down, high-level view and dig into specifics as well. And you know, I won't speak for myself, but consumers in general find that really useful. I certainly do as well. Both perspectives, yeah.
Okay. Yaniv, where are we headed with all this? What do you see is coming down the pike?
I see growth in reviews, definitely. People are more and more trusting reviews, more and more using reviews. But I think I get contacted by a lot of companies trying to find new models. So, you know, the current model of reviews, and people use the average rating, people use usefulness on Amazon, for example, different sites rate or rank reviews using different algorithms. And, you know, given the, you know, limited capacity of consumers to read, you probably go over the first five that you see or the most useful reviews, or you go into the negative and positive. But I think the rules of the game will change in the future, because there's
there are games which probably work more efficiently.
In what sense?
So right now, it's really hard to tell if the reviewers or the reviews that you're reading are of people that are similar to you in some respect. So if I like, I don't know, Indian food, and I read a review of a person that you know doesn't like Indian food as much as I do, there's some sort of mismatch between our preferences. In the future, I think, and this is only a guess or an example of a different system, but if you can somehow find a way to gauge the difference between myself and the review or viewer I'm reading, that will make things more efficient. If you can somehow know the credibility of the user that's writing the review, that's another dimension that will help. If you can somehow, I'm actually aware of a few companies who are actually working on models where you incentivize reviewers, and that again will deal with some of the problems. Right now, think of you know who goes online and does the review. Mostly, it's people who really like the place or really hate the place. That's some sort of bias. If you're indifferent about the place or you like it a bit, there's less incentive for you to write the reviews. And that's another you know sort of problem innate to the system that has to be solved.
Do you think, Ned, to your point, that I know there are a couple sites I've seen where that are trying to get going that are based on your friends. It's kind of like taking the LinkedIn model, except with reviews. Do you think that those will succeed based on what you're saying, or do you think that the scope is just too small?
That's one of the next steps. I mean, this idea existed for a long time. The problem right now is the capacity, the amount of reviews. So if I want to do something, the chance that my friends will have reviews on that place is still small because of the magnitude. But it's definitely a good way to filter relevant reviews, relevant information, and for me to also engage with my friends and you know ask them further beyond the review. I have different questions, more specific questions. Basically, reviews are you know another way of thinking of a global conversation or collective conversation of you know filter information and making good decisions. So it's going to there's so much incentive to you know change you know improve the system that I'm pretty sure that it's going to change and it's going to be better in the future.
Okay, and thank you. And what about you, Jesse? What do you have any like final thoughts on where this is headed or from your perspective?
Well, in a lot of senses, there was an article that just came out recently about the number, the loss just in the past year of paid restaurant critics. And their ranks have been decimated because just in general, the publishing industry has shrunk. So just kind of as a collateral damage or a peripheral effect of that is that I think that there are less and less paid professional voices for you to turn. And it seems consequentially that there's going to be more of a voice for everybody.
Okay. And Matt?
Yeah, you know, I agree. And I think that if you go back to the credibility point, I think that, you know, people are trusting more and more the democratization of information, if you will, to be more credible. You know, not only real customers who've had experiences that might be a stranger to you, but also friends, right, as the point you made earlier. So, I think that's the direction that this continues to go.
Okay. Well, that's it for City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Jesse Hirsch, restaurant critic and food writer for the San Francisco Examiner, Matt Stewart, co-founder and co-CEO of Main Street Hub, a company that helps local businesses protect their reputation, and Yaniv Dover, assistant professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. I want to thank you all for being a part of our show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
For a link to this show and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website by going to the KALW.org site and then going to programs and scrolling down to City Visions. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Thank you so much, Eric. And tonight's show was produced by Lisa Denenmark. Great show, Lisa. City Vision's senior producer is Susie Britton. Please join us back here on December 3rd when we'll be discussing the new local movement that uses technology to self-monitor our bodies. And as for tonight, while we were here in the studio, there was a memorial service for our beloved Alan Farley, who joined KLW in 1975. And he created many shows, including My Favorite Things. And on a personal note, one of my favorite things about Alan was the sparkle in his eye and his smile. So from all of us at City Visions, Alan, we will miss you very much. Again, this is Lauren Meltzer. Thank you for listening. Good night, and have a great week, and happy Thanksgiving.